Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, as the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy. Brought to you by Wedgewood Pines, Core Golf, Mass Golf, Freedom Boat Club, and FN3P Golf. Now, Hardy.
Welcome into the Sports Hub Golf Club. I got to tell you, today is different. Today feels different on the Sports Hub Golf Club. Why? Because we're coming off of a Saturday that was absolutely gorgeous. This is how it's been so far through, what are we, about a month and a half into the show now, a month into the show. What is today? May 7th? Yeah, about a month in. About a month in for this 11th season of the Sports Hub Golf Club. And most Sundays so far, out of the four or five we've done, sitting here being like, oh boy, not great golf this weekend. I mean, maybe acceptable, maybe not downpour, maybe not freezing cold, but it hasn't felt like a golf weekend. Yesterday, if you weren't outside, I'm sure you felt like you were missing out on being outside. Absolutely glorious. Today, already looking absolutely glorious in terms of weather. If you're going to get out and play, if you're going to do anything golf related today, it's setting up so nice. Look at this. I mean, where I am, I got a high of 76 degrees today, sunny, nothing but sunshine until midday, a little few clouds rolling in the afternoon. Here's the other thing that's different. I'm not going to be able to play at all this weekend. It is unbelievable, my luck. A lot of family stuff going on over the last few days, which is all wonderful. Very happy to participate and have family in town and doing all the family things. But, oh boy, I'm trying to figure out a way to get out late today. When I say late, I mean one of those where you go to the golf course around, I don't know, 5 o'clock if I'm lucky, and just play as many holes as I can, because it is. And then, like the idiot that I am, as we're running around doing some stuff yesterday, I decide to just stop off over at Palillo's Garden Center. I'm like, I got a few plants and shrubs I need to plant around in the backyard. You know what? I'll just pick up six of those while I'm over here. And I popped right on next door to the landscape supply center. I'm like, hey, how long would it take to get 4 yards of mulch delivered? Yeah, I can throw one or, you know, one and a half in the back of my truck, but I need like four or five this time. Oh, we'll have it there in a couple hours. So not only do I have a bunch of stuff going on today, family-wise, like we do this weekend, I also have 4 yards of mulch that got delivered yesterday and it's sitting out in my front yard. All these things are going to prevent me from getting on the golf course today. Idiot! It's fine. It's fine. Maybe I'll get to watch some golf. Maybe I'll get to watch some of the Wells Fargo Championship final round today. Wyndham Clark is alone atop the leaderboard at 16 under par. Oh, by the way, before we get much further into the show today, great guest on the show this morning, Noda Begay, will be joining us here in just a few more minutes. If you're a fan of golf from the 90s, you may remember Noda as a four-time winner on the PGA Tour. Stanford, he's from New Mexico. I remember hearing about and knowing about Noda when I was living in New Mexico in the 90s. And it was a really interesting and cool story for an indigenous American, a Native American, to have such success on the PGA Tour and, a local hero there in Albuquerque. But, I mean, it goes beyond that. Do you know how many four-time winners there are on the PGA Tour? There are plenty of guys who go out and make a very nice living on the PGA Tour who have won, first of all, never not once. You know, like you put together enough top 10 finishes, top five finishes, and you can make a real nice living. And there are a lot of guys who have played on tour. They never won one. Guys like Brendan Steele, who we've spoken to on the show here before, he's got 2-3 wins on tour. He's been out there for 20 years. Nota Begay won 4 times on the PGA Tour and won the Northeast Amateur. And this guy was a capital P player for a time. Golf analyst now on NBC and the Golf Channel. And we're going to be talking with him here in a few more minutes about just stuff. No reason. He's not selling anything. He's not hustling anything. Just kind enough to come on the show and talk some golf here this morning. Thanks to somebody who was listening, a gentleman who I haven't even met yet, a guy by the name of Josh Drew, who put me in contact with Nota. So thank you, Josh. And we'll be talking with Nota here in a few more minutes. Back to the scoreboard there, though, at the Wells Fargo Championship. Quail Hollow, North Carolina. Wyndham Clark is alone atop the leaderboard right now. Wyndham Clark, apparently, is what I don't know about Wyndham Clark, would fill a warehouse. He did manage to put together his second lowest round, according to par, so far in his career. And he's had a hell of a tournament so far. Yesterday, a bogey-free 63. He made birdies at 2, 6, 7, 8. I love these runs that these guys go on. He makes the tourney, birdies 10, and then birdies 13, 14, 15. I mean, stretches of 3 birdies in a row, twice in a round, no bogeys. Good enough for his 63. 8 under on the day on the par 71 Quail Hollow. It was good enough for Wyndham Clark to be alone atop the leaderboard going into the final round today. But apparently, Wyndham is both long and accurate off the tee. Again, two things I can't relate to. And apparently playing very much within himself. He laid up with an iron on the par 4 14th yesterday, which is drivable. And a lot of guys going for this green. It's a drivable par 4. He's done it all 3 days. So here's a guy who knows his game, easily has the length and the accuracy to drive the green, but instead sticking with his game plan, knows what the smart play is for him. Trevor Immelman was questioning the move as he did it yesterday. And it's not like half the field was doing what Wyndham Clark did yesterday. Only 6 guys on the entire golf course didn't try and drive that green. And Wyndham Clark has the length and the accuracy to do it. He's like, no, not me. And what does he end up doing? He birdied the hole. And by the way, just so when you're thinking, oh, maybe he does know what he's doing, he missed 1 green in regulation yesterday. 1. And there's a great photo online. I saw it yesterday as it was just after it happened. His approach on 18 was just off the quote-unquote putting surface. I mean, it's nestled up there on the frog hair, and the on-course interviewer afterward or at the just off 18 said, do you count that as a green in regulation? He laughed. He's like, no, you know, it's not a green in regulation. It doesn't give you any stroke shaved off your final round anyway, so it doesn't matter. But just missing 1 green yesterday and really playing smart for him. You know, I'm not saying it's smart for everybody, but he realized what his game plan was for the week, and he's got himself in a position where he is alone atop the leaderboard going into the final round. Xander Schauffele had some interesting things to say as he sits right now 2 strokes off the lead. He's at 14 under par. He's alone in second place. He said you have these mindsets going out there about what you're going to do on in a given round. He said, and sometimes it takes seeing someone else doing it. He said, you know, you might go into a round where the conditions are bad and say, like, wow, 3 under might be really good today. That might be good enough to, you know, to be in the hunt. And someone goes 7 under and, you know, you're back there suckling hind teat. He's like, it really helps to see someone else doing it. And I remember seeing this years ago. I think Nick Faldo talked about this in terms of mimicking what you see on the golf course. There was a great lesson one time where somebody was asking, all right, yeah, so you have problems with your flop shots. You know, what is it that you can't do? It's like, well, I can't pop the ball up and get it to land softly, you know, in a short amount of distance. Well, who can? He's like, oh, well, like Phil Mickelson can. Oh, yeah? And the instructor is asking the player, he's like, well, what does Phil do? So I've seen Phil on TV, you know, he kind of like, well, you know, he stands like this and, you know, he moves his hand through really fast. He goes, well, show me the golf ball. He goes, okay, well, he does this. He kind of stands this way and he moves his hands quickly through the ball and the guy swings at the ball and it pops up in the air and lands. And the instructor's laughing. He's like, well, why don't you just do that? It doesn't work every time. It is not foolproof. But if you have some aptitude, some knowledge of the game, of your game, and the swing. And here, this is something that I've tried to adopt, not for flop shots and certainly not during a round. But if you see something from a good player that is effective, and I think it works best for things like a putting stroke or maybe even a quick pre-shot routine, why not do that? Until you develop your own thing that works on a consistent basis. I was doing it for a while with the way Brent Snedeker was putting. Now, other people will shudder at that, and it's like, oh, he was awful. He had a stretch where Brent Snedeker was putting very well. He was using this kind of like popping putting stroke method. I'm like, you know what? I kind of like that. I like that better than the, you know, easy, smooth stroke back and through. And, you know, it's a lot of time for my brain to screw things up. I'd rather just take a pop at the ball and see if I can keep it online. I was doing that for a while, and it was putting much better. And like most things in golf, it worked until it didn't work. But there is some value in mimicking what you see from other players. And here's Xander Schauffele saying exactly the same thing. Yeah. Monkey see, monkey do is definitely a thing that happens out here. That is the quote from the guy who's currently in second place at the Wells Fargo. Finally, Adam Scott. He hasn't won on tour since going back to before the pandemic. It's been a while, 3 years anyway. So he is in the hunt, and a lot of people will be watching Adam Scott today. I followed Adam Scott my one trip to the Masters, and it was, you know, still kind of pandemic era. It was 2021, so there weren't a lot of people on the golf course, and it was, I've told the story many times, but I got in this little spot on the golf course where Phil Mickelson was in a group and Adam Scott was in a group. Xander Schauffele, as a matter of fact, coincidentally, because we were just talking about him, and I kind of toggled between these two groups and got a chance to watch Adam Scott swing the club in person at Augusta, and he still is just phenomenal to watch. What a gorgeous, gorgeous swing. Hasn't won in a while, but he's got a chance today. All right, so there you go. All caught up on what's going on the PGA Tour. A little bit later, we're going to talk about handicaps, not only from a mass golf perspective, but also from a... Oh, what is that sound that's coming out of my computer for no reason at all right now? That's interesting. Not from just a mass golf perspective, but just from an understanding perspective in terms of what it means, what your handicap index really indicates about your game. A good article from golf.com and Sam Weinman that I want to share with you a couple of things, because I think we take it for granted. We talk about handicaps. We talk about indexes. What does it really mean? How does it apply when you're getting ready to go play? We'll talk about that a little bit later. But up next, my conversation with Noda Begay, 4-time winner on the PGA Tour, analyst now for NBC Sports and the Golf Channel. That's happening next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Start your cots. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Joining us now on the Sports Hub Golf Club, Noda Begay, four-time winner on the PGA Tour, NBC Sports, Golf Channel, and, Noda, first of all, great to talk to you, and it's so nice to talk to somebody with a 505 area code, because I lived in New Mexico myself for a couple of years. It was some of the best 2.5 year spans of my life.
Oh, that's good to hear. It's a great place. We moved back in 2015 with my three kids and my wife, and we happily reside in Albuquerque now, and we love it. And what's the one thing you miss?
Los Cuates. I miss.
That's right.
It's a lot about the food, and it's also the ability to, one of the winters I was there was a good one at Sandia Peak. And there was one day in particular when I went snowboarding in the morning and then squeezed in 9 holes in the afternoon at the Arroyo Golf Course.
Oh, that's a good day. That's a good use of your time. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. One of the things that people really sort of, I guess, overlook or isn't on their tourist radar is just the outdoor activities, the world-class fly fishing, hiking. We got some wonderful mountains for skiing and a lot of really neat outdoor activities, which is why I really enjoy being a part of the community.
I want to talk to you about a few things here this morning. Thanks for taking the time, but I also want to say happy anniversary, because I don't know if you're aware of this, 25th anniversary of something that you did. Do you know what I'm referring to?
My gosh, no, I don't.
Okay.
You're going to have to remind me.
All right. It was May 15th, 1998. It was in Virginia.
Yeah, I shot 59 that day.
Yes, you did. 59. So holy cow.
I've forgotten about that.
No, you forgot about that because you shot 59 so many times in your life. I always say it's the rarest thing in golf, a sub 60 round. And I believe that was not that, one is better than the other, but it was a par 72 course. You didn't shoot 59 on a course missing a couple of par fives.
I agree 100%. Not all 59s are equal. I think the par 72s maybe stand just a tick above the other ones, but nonetheless, they're all great rounds. And at that time, that was the first 59 shot in the history of the Korn Ferry Tour, and I think it was maybe only the fourth or fifth 59 round in the history of the PGA Tour between their major tours. So it was quite a time to do it.
Well, I went down the rabbit hole a little bit on that round, Noda, and I think it's worthy of mention that you teed off on 10 for that round, and you had a decent opening nine. You shot 32. I think a lot of 59s kind of start the other way, where someone goes real low on the front and then hangs on and does enough to go low on the back. You instead make the turn. You play you start your second nine, which was on hole number one, with an eagle. And do you remember what you did on the hole number three on your second nine that day?
Well, I backtrack a little earlier in the round, standing on the 17th tee, which was my eighth hole of the day. I was only 200 par for the day.
Right.
So, through seven holes, I was standing on 200 par. I hadn't made a cut that year. I might have made only one cut, but I was struggling with my game. And so my first objective was to just make the cut. And I made about a 25-footer for birdie on the 17th green. I birdied the par 5 18th, and then, hole out for eagle on the 10th, and then two holes later make a hole in one. And I squeezed the birdie in between those two eagles, and all of a sudden, I go from 4 under to 9 under in the span of three holes. So that's when the light went off. I was like, wow, this is kind of a special day. I think I could shoot 59 today.
And you went 11 under on your final 11 holes.
And with a couple pars.
That'd be even better. Yeah, I shot a 59 with a double bogey and a bogey. Yeah. No, with a couple of pars. But the ace was, it wasn't like a 110-yard pitching putt. You had to, according to the story that I read, you had it. You knocked a 6-iron on a 182-yard par 3 to make that ace. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was straight down the hill. It was playing about 190 yards. And I mean, as soon as it left the club place, I'm like, man, this is online. And I saw it go in. I was like, oh, my God. I turned to my caddy, who I hired in the parking lot on Wednesday afternoon, and took him for probably, you know, one of the best rounds of his career that particular day. So it was a special week for him.
Yeah, I think you had a 6-footer left for birdie on your final hole. Do you remember that putt? Because obviously at that point, you have to know that putt is for a 59.
Yeah, it was about, I think, more like 10 or 12 feet. And the only thing I said to myself before I hit the putt is that nobody's going to remember you tomorrow if you shoot 60. So don't leave it short.
Wow. Wow. So cool. Well, that happy anniversary, 25 years ago, that 59 there at the, was it the Dominion Golf Club, I think, at Virginia? Does that sound right?
Yep, that's it. That's
okay.
It.
Right on.
In Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, I'll never forget that place.
There's something else I figured out about you in your 4 wins on the PGA Tour. And I'm hesitant to bring it up because I didn't double check it, but I believe your wins at the Reno Tahoe Open, at the Michelob Championship, at the St. Jude, and at the Travelers, not to mention your win at the Northeast Amateur, which around here in Boston, a lot of people follow that tournament, and well, tons of good players have won that thing. It's a, you know, it's a great indicator of who's going to be, you know, among the best players in the world. All 5 of those
absolutely.
Tournaments never won by your good friend Tiger Woods. Are you aware of that?
I am not aware of that. That's a great find. I mean, I thought I had good research people on my Golf Channel broadcast team. You may have to come on for a couple of weeks and help me out.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to. But the Travelers was the one that really threw me. I'm like, wow, Tiger never won the Travelers, huh? But Noda did.
Yeah, typically, you know, the thing, I guess, Tiger, when he was winning all of his tournaments, would play the bigger, like the bigger tracks, the longer courses. And if you kind of just look at those 3 golf courses, with the exception of Reno, you know, you're looking at TPC Southwind, which, you know, isn't really a bomber's golf course. Travelers isn't really a bomber's golf course. And Kingsmill, I think they have the LPGA event there now. It is more of a positional course, and not that Tiger couldn't win on those types of courses, but he just typically scheduled around the, you know, the Bay Hills, the Muirfields, the Torrey Pines of the world, just because at that time he was longer than everybody and he hit his irons higher than everybody. And it was just kind of not a fair fight, as Roger Maltby would say.
Yeah.
When it came to Tiger on those bigger tracks.
So you mentioned Roger Maltby and some of the things that he likes to say. Now we are listening to you as part of golf coverage through NBC and the Golf Channel. And I got to say, I think you're fantastic doing that job. How do you like it, especially when you have to split time between that and the Champions Tour, which you've already made 4 or 5 starts on the Champions Tour this year? It's got to make for a busy schedule. How do you like doing both?
It's a really busy schedule, and you know, I'm fully committed to the golf in my career, as I am to the television side. I think that television was a huge blessing for me at that point in my career, because I don't think there's many athletes that plan for the end of their career. We all plan for the beginning and what we're going to do on the PGA Tour or the NBA or the NFL. But injuries, poor play, mental issues, you never know, just kind of tell you when it's time. You know, in golf, you just can't shoot the scores anymore, and you can't piece the rounds together, and so it kind of ushers you out. But, you know, having television there to sort of start a new career, and Tommy Roy and Molly Solomon, everybody over at NBC and Golf Channel have been just great to me throughout my career in teaching me television, allowing me a platform to sort of utilize my experience and perspective. And I try to improve each and every year, and I've tried to just find things in the broadcast that people can't see on Google search, or something that helps their own individual game. And it's kind of been a successful formula for me thus far.
Well, like I said, I enjoy watching you, and it's that perspective that you bring to the broadcast that I think is helpful. And it's probably helpful for you when you've spent maybe some more time in a given week working on your game or making a start somewhere on the Champions Tour to have to show up and work TV. At least you know going in a lot more than most people know about what's about to transpire on that golf course, either because you've played it or you've got some insight about shots that these guys are going to be hitting, where I could research all week long and not see something that you see just by virtue of who you are and what you've already done.
Yeah, and in talking about golf and calling golf like we do in all of these various broadcasts at the biggest tournaments in the world, there's really no substitute for playing at a competitive level. So right now, this next year, you know, I may do some of my best broadcasting because for being fully committed to the competitive side of golf on the PGA Tour Champions just has given me a completely new appreciation and respect for the game, for what the players on the PGA Tour can do, for what the players out here on the PGA Tour Champions can do, because I'm getting my butt whipped right now out here. You know, I hadn't played in 12 years in any sort of major PGA Tour event, and you know, to come out here and you know, feel like I'm ready in some cases to compete, and just, you know, kind of getting trampled on by the field is, you know, it's going to be an uphill climb, but something that I'm up for.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've put together some nice rounds. You've had a couple of sub-70 rounds and a couple of the tournaments already this year, but like you said, it's a busy schedule. Back to the TV side for a moment, you mentioned being able to say things on the broadcast that help people with their games. I see you do a lot of work with kids and youth on the course. I have a couple of kids right now who, you know, tinker around. They're not golf obsessed, but I struggle with telling them things and helping them with things to make the game more enjoyable and less frustrating. Is there something that you've learned when it comes to teaching younger players that helps them be less frustrated with what is arguably the most frustrating game in the world?
So I classify that there's a couple different levels that I look at with junior golfers. There's sort of the recreational side kids that are interested in playing, but aren't fully committed, but sort of get a certain enjoyment out of the game. There's kids that are one foot in, one foot out, meaning that they're pretty talented golfers, but they play other sports or they have other activities. Maybe they're into music or theater, or they have a job, or but they're still good enough to compete at a pretty high level, maybe within the high school ranks. And then there's your elite level golfers. But at every single level, what I think is one of the most critical components to a junior golfer improving is that they have friends that play. I see the kids that I see get the most enjoyment out of golf, their buddies play.
Yeah.
And their girlfriends play. Or they have a group of kids, whether it's at a club or their PGA Tour Junior League team, or there's some sort of connection socially that keeps them in the game.
Yes.
And then once they get to a certain competitive standard, and they either like pursuing the brass ring, the trophies, or they don't. The ones that like to pursue it will continue to move on sort of on their own individual path, and the ones that don't will sort of fall off and maybe play some high school golf, but, you know, once high school is done, they won't play much competitively unless they do some amateur things. But the social part for kids is so critical, because if you're asking a young player, you know, between the ages of 10 and 13, which is those formative years with their friend groups and they're maturing and they don't have any one of their peers to sort of hang out with out there. You know, around the golf, 4 hours by yourself, that's not a lot of fun. Or 4 hours with your dad, which is why my kids don't play, because they don't want to hang out with me for 4 hours.
Boy, that hits a little too close to home. Yeah,
I don't blame them.
No, but the answer is right there in front of me, because based on what my daughter has already done, whether it's soccer or lacrosse or track, you know, she likes them and she's decent at these sports, but it's her friends that are playing that have really kind of motivated her to go out for these different sports. And you, just to hear you say it, I'm like, a light bulb went off in my head. Oh, yeah. Just got to get a couple of their friends to play along with them. It's going to be that much more fun for them.
Yeah, it's a game changer. Yeah. It really is.
Final question for you. This is Noda Begay, by the way, from NBC Sports and the Golf Channel, and of course on the Champions Tour now. You've done a lot of work with tribal communities, golf courses as a consultant, and I'm wondering what types of things you work on with the tribal communities when it comes to building golf courses, either on their land, and the types of things that you look for to make it a beneficial experience for everyone involved.
Well, number one, I want to make it a successful project. If it's a business endeavor for a tribe, I want to make it work into their model.
Yeah.
In terms of costs and projected revenues and things like that. If it's on the programmatic side along the nonprofit line, then, you know, we want to make sure that we're making an impact and we leave the kids with something that will benefit them, whether it's on the wellness side, the inspirational side, or even on the cultural side. What a lot of people don't realize is in the 48 lower states here, there's still 575 roughly sovereign American Indian nations that are all self-governing and, exist in a variety of different capacities. Some have larger land bases, some have smaller land bases, some have no land base at all. And the thing that we've noticed through our nonprofit work is that the kids are all facing the same sort of disparaging health numbers in terms of early onset type 2 diabetes, high childhood obesity rates, low education rates, low high school graduation rates. And so we know we can't fix everything, but what we do try and do is give them a little hope and inspiration, make them proud of who they are, where they're from. But also try and encourage them to, go to college and sort of be a productive member of their own communities.
Well, it sounds like a great program. You've got a lot going on. I mean, between NBC Sports and the Golf Channel and playing golf at a very, very high level on the Champions Tour makes me all that more appreciative of you taking a few minutes today. Noda Begay, thanks so much. Look forward to hearing you more on the TV, watching you play golf, watching what you have to do on the Golf Channel, and it's been a pleasure. I hope we can do it again someday.
Well, thanks for having me.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Swing, every birdie, every sand trap.
Every Sunday, it's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, a couple of things to get to here. Number one, our partners at Mass Golf do a great job with getting kids on the golf course. And a lot of people, I have asked this in the past, I hear other people ask, I was just talking with Noda Begay about it, how do you get kids into the game? Well, Mass Golf is doing a lot, and they also have a program called Youth on Course. So this is for kids age 6 to 18. So, man, beyond kids, you're talking about 16, 17, 18-year-olds, they can play golf for $5 per round. Now,
we talk about this a lot. Golf is a cool sport, but, you know, it's expensive and you got to get clubs and green fees. A, it doesn't have to be expensive. There are ways, and I've purchased clubs for my kids, and I've probably gone through three sets now, at least three sets, at Golfer's Warehouse, where they will sell you the driver, a hybrid, two irons, and a putter in a bag. And back in the day, it used to cost about $110. I think they're up to about $150, $160 now. If you're talking about young kids and you just want to get them some clubs, their own clubs, and have them in a bag that are fit for them and a size for them, it's a great way to do it. And any parent who has been a hockey parent or a baseball parent or virtually any sport, hell, track, you can end up spending a lot of money on shoes. All you need are a few clubs, a couple of golf balls, boom, you're on your way. So that part of it doesn't have to be outrageously expensive. Getting onto the golf course, okay, now you might be spending a few more bucks, and not everybody has a backyard that they can go and practice in, and I get it. You want to be able to go hit some balls. Well, Mass Golf and the Youth on Course program will get your kid onto these golf courses for $5. So you want to sign up your kids or maybe some kids you know, massgolf.org. I'll get you all set up, $5 a round. And that is one way to get around the, oh, golf is too expensive for kids. Doesn't have to be. Mass Golf out there doing it with $5 rounds for kids 6 to 18. Not every golf course. You'll see the ones that are participating, but it really is a great program. Youth on Course from Mass Golf. Mass Golf also very much in the business of getting you squared away with your handicap and your index. And we've talked about it a lot. I think, we've had people on the show before talking about it. I think Jesse Menachem is going to be on with us next week, and we might get into the handicap thing a little bit more. But we're also going to be talking about Golf Day at Fenway Park and something new that came out about the Golf Economic Impact Study. That's exciting. Jesse will make it interesting. Don't worry. Don't worry. It'll be good. But we talk about handicaps a lot with Mass Golf and how they can get you. There are some very common questions when it comes to handicaps and what that actually means and why you should have one. Basically, if you know anything about it, I won't bore you with it. But it is, you'll hear guys talking about what's your handicap or, you know, what's your index. And you'll hear people say that there's scratch, which generally means zero. Okay. Okay. Well, what does that really mean? How does that translate into any meaningful information when it comes to playing golf? Excuse me. An author by the name of Sam Weinman, did an article that I have here at the ready, if you'll just give me a moment, because I want to be able to relay to you some of the stuff that he talked about in the whole, what is the handicap really, really mean? Because there have been some interesting developments in the way handicaps are calculated. And by the way, it is easier than ever to put your scores in and to calculate your handicap now with the apps and everything on your phone. As soon as your round is over, you just pop it up. I have the USGA GHIN, GIN or GIN app right there on my phone. You just post your score, boom, you're done. And it's constantly updating and giving you an accurate handicap. But Sam Weinman says this is what people get wrong about handicaps. All right. And just based on what he wrote, sounds like he and I are very, very similar players. At the time that he wrote this, I believe he says he's a 12.6 or something. Like, ooh, okay, I can relate to that. He said, yeah, I'll go out there, make a few pars, make a few bogeys, very occasional birdie, a couple of bad holes, but. He said, but when it comes to translating it, all right, I'm a 12.6. A lot of people will just take that to mean, oh, you're going to shoot 12.6 strokes over par when you go out and play. Oh, you must go out there and shoot 84. No, 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 no. This isn't what it means, at least the way it's calculated now. He said the biggest misconception is that a handicap is essentially a scoring average. He said the handicap doesn't account for our worst days, and more controversially, it doesn't really account for what might be considered our norm. It uses the best eight of the most recent 20 scores. All right? So essentially what it means, and I've said this before, it is a way of saying if you go out there and play your best, you know, your best golf, that is what you're capable of shooting. Does that make sense? If you go out and play well, you should be able to go out there and shoot close to your handicap. But it doesn't happen all that often. You know, some studies say like one out of five times maybe a player will actually play to his handicap. In the other rounds, he will be above his handicap. A 12 index does not reflect a player who averages roughly 12 strokes over par. What it does is provides a baseline for a fair match between players. So that's number one. It's not scoring average. He also says that handicaps protect better players, or at least should protect better players. So if I'm going out with a buddy today and I have a lot of matches like this, I'll go play somebody who's a 5 and I'm currently a 12, just like Sam is, the guy who's writing this article. For the 5 player, it means this. My bad days are less bad than theirs, and my good days are less good than theirs. So when I play poorly, I can play a good 8 or 9 strokes higher than my index. A bad day, yes, but it's not impossible. Meaning if I'm a 12, okay, that means 84. Are there days when I go out there and shoot 93? Absolutely. But better players don't stray that often from what they're capable of playing. So a 5 is probably not going to go out there and shoot. A guy who's, when he's playing his best, shoot 77, he's probably not going to go out and shoot 88. All right? Generally. It doesn't happen all that often to better players. Then he gets into what net double bogeys are and all this, and you do a little bit of reading on this, and he says, look, the handicap system isn't perfect. He said, you know, for the days when you flirt with breaking 80, there are plenty of days when 90 is in play, and, you know, you're not going to necessarily play a game that reflects your handicap. But what it does do is provide a very, very good baseline for measuring your game and putting together competitive matches against players both better than you and worse than you. So it's a good article. I recommend it, and I also recommend going on to Mass Golf, getting your membership and getting your handicap. And if for no other reason, not just to play against your buddies and have matches, but a lot of tournaments you play in over the summer, you might get invited to, you know, a member guest, and you need to have a legit handicap. They just won't take your word for it. Oh, I'm like a 15. No, 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 no. There's a lot on the line, and even some of these member guests, people take them seriously enough, sometimes a little too seriously, but there's money, there's prizes, there's stuff on the line. You have to have a legit handicap registered in order to play in some of these things. Otherwise, they're like, no. Unless you want to get in all kinds of arguments afterward in the clubhouse and have the person who invited you be on the outs with his or her friends at their club because they brought a guest to the member guest who had a BS handicap, and you guys ended up winning a bunch of stuff because you said you were a 15 and then went out and, you know, shot 3 over par 3 days in a row. That would not be good. All right. We are still looking for New England's best public golf course, and I got a chance for you to score weekly golf-related prizes. Core Golf, Dr. Green, Par 28, Arnold Palmer Spiked. Visit the contest page on the Sports Hub website to vote for your favorite course. Come back each week for another chance to win. 98.5 thesportshub.com, looking for the best public golf course in New England. Thank you once again for being here, Ryan Beaton. Thank you. Josh Drew, thank you for helping me line up Noda Begay, who is on the show today. Thanks to Noda. We'll do it again next week right here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.